Today on Rockin' the Suburbs,
we're talking about a band that made it big in Northeast Ohio, but remains relatively unknown elsewhere.
Great! I love Michael Stanley Band. Okay, this is an amazing thing, Patrick. I want to say this.
Yep.
Right up front here. A lot of times we set a recording time, and we don't always stick to it. And I know a lot of times that's my fault. A lot of times I'm the laggard. I got things going on, whatever. And I'm like, give me 10 more minutes. Give me 15 more minutes.
You're a busy
whatever.
Busy man.
Yes. And today, not only was I prompt and you were prompt, but we have like musicians on the show, and they were prompt too.
That's
probably
amazing.
The most amazing thing, right? I think that would happen here. So I'll get to that in a second here. The show you're listening to is called Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
And as we have done on the show before, we have patrons of the podcast, people who support the show, and they get to come on once every 3 months and pick the topic for an episode. And this is like our earliest. I think he was the original patron of the show, I believe. Barrett Reese out there in Pittsburgh. Yeah. Hello, Barrett.
Hey, Patrick. Hey, Jim.
And Barrett wanted to invite a couple of old friends on, and that would be the topic of the show, them talking about their musical adventures. And you can probably explain it better than I can, so why don't you take it away?
Okay. Back in about 1996, a friend of mine told me to come out to Kent State and see this band that she had seen the night before. So, like always, got in my car. It was an old Geo Tracker back in those days. And we sat in this place, and if I remember right, there were like hay bales around the stage. But
yeah,
the band was absolutely amazing. Got their cassette tape at the end of the night, which is this one here, still the original
one.
For
us. Yeah, holding it up for us on the camera. Okay. Yeah.
And then, of course, you know, being the 1990s, there wasn't really good email, so signed up for their mailing list. And I think probably about a month or so later, I got their mailing list in the mail, which was a little bit not that great, but I wound up like redoing it for them at work one day, just being really bored. And I showed it to, I think I either showed it to Dallas or Zygmunt, and they asked me if I wanted to take over doing the newsletter for them.
Okay.
And I think from there, just wound up seeing them more and more, and wound up doing their website for them back in the days where you had about maybe 5 megs for an entire website. And then also by going to the shows, of course, equipment had to be carried on and off the stage, so we got roped into doing that. And
okay,
just kind of went from there.
Okay. So introduce these guys then.
Okay. I'd like to introduce the guys from SomaSonic. We have Dallas Riffle, and we also have Jeff Novak.
Welcome.
Thank you, guys.
Hey, thank you. Glad to be here.
Thanks for having us.
So let me just start here. So listeners can get the sense of your voices here. That was Jeff, you heard. Say hello again, Jeff.
Good evening.
And Jeff Novak is calling in from his car. We can see his car here.
That's right.
Sorry about that.
No, you're fine. Looks like it's pretty roomy. Is that like an SUV or something?
Yeah, it's a small SUV. Yeah.
All right. Looks nice. Did you get a good deal
on it? Geo Tracker.
Great, yeah. This is my upgrade from my Geo Tracker. I got a good deal.
There you go. And where are you right now?
So I got off the golf course about 10 minutes ago, so I went running to my car. Yeah, so fun night day.
You're in Ohio?
Yes, sir.
Whereabouts?
I am in the Akron area right now.
Akron area. Okay, right. So that's the origin of the band, and I grew up in Toledo, by the way. Not that that matters, because it, you know, the different parts of the state don't really have much connection, I don't think. But anyway, but I'm a big Browns fan, so
there you go. That's a good thing.
That connects Browns. Us, right? That binds us. Yeah. Okay. And then Dallas Riffle, say hello to the listeners.
Hello, listeners.
There you go. And are you also in the Akron area?
Actually, I live in Cleveland now.
But okay. I did grow up just outside of Akron, in a little town called Talmadge out there. So,
okay.
Spent a good amount of my life down in the Akron area.
Okay. So why don't you tell us a little bit, you know, Barrett mentioned the name of the band was Somasonic. I know it didn't start out that way. You guys had some success, and it sounds like you had a lot of fun from what I've read. And then you've gone through some different iterations and different experiences. So I just think this is really fascinating, Patrick, from just sort of a standpoint of, like, you know, guys who are trying to make something happen, right? They love music. They want to play music for people. They want to record music. And then, you know, they're trying to get something going. And there's probably a lot of ups and downs. And I think that's probably, you know, what makes it a fascinating story, right?
Yeah.
So start us from the beginning. What happened?
Well, I ended up meeting Jeff through some mutual friends in like 1995. Mm-hmm. A friend of mine named Dave was a bass player from another band that my band at the time. I was in kind of a thrash metal band, and Dave was in another thrash metal band, and we ended up playing these teen clubs together all the time. This place we used to play in Medina. I don't remember what it was called. It was down in that plaza over by 71. Yeah. Club Fascinations. That's what it was called. the teen clubs always had the best names, you know.
Yeah.
The Dry Parrot was another one in the area. So, yeah, we were playing these clubs, and Dave and I got to know each other. He was really a fun guy, just a lot of craziness, a lot of crazy energy, and, he happened to be friends with Jeff and his brother Zygmunt, who we called back then, we called him Joey. Those two, they were in a band called Paranormal, and Paranormal was nothing like the bands that Dave and I were in. They were more, they were a little more hip. They were more like alternative sort of stuff. And I know the singer for Paranormal ended up either leaving or getting kicked out or something. And then it was just Jeff and Zygmunt and Dave. And so Dave ended up giving me a call to see if I might want to try my hand singing with the band. And, you know, we came out to Wadsworth. At the time, it was me and my guitar player from the earlier band. And he didn't end up sticking around, but I stuck with the band, and we had some really good chemistry just kind of right out of the gate. I mean, all of us couldn't have been different as far as all the different influences we had, but we had good chemistry nonetheless. So we kind of decided we just wanted to kind of plow forth and see what we could come up with. And it was really just kind of a cacophony of all kinds of stuff coming together. Okay.
And about how old were you guys at this time?
95, that would make me about 20 at that time.
Okay.
Yeah, me too.
Were you guys in school, or what were you doing?
I was at the time. I was at Akron U.
Okay.
I think, were you at Akron also at that time, Jeff?
Yes, I was. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just trying to give people a sense of where you were in your lives and what was going on. Okay.
Yeah, I missed way too many classes due to gigging, but trying to go to school, so.
Yeah, I did too. I ended up kind of dropping out partway through college back at that time. I went back much later in life and finished college, but I ended up dropping out at some point because I had these aspirations and thought we were going to be rock stars, and it just kind of flopped in my head. I'm like, we're going to do this, man.
Yeah.
But you know, it was it's that time of life when you kind of just take chances and, you know, see what you can do. But
yeah,
I mean, the sound was crazy at first, but it started to kind of gel. And, you know, at first it was kind of very much based on the rhythm section. You know, Jeff and Dave had this kind of real funk, Jane's Addiction kind of Red Hot Chili Peppers thing going. But, you know, on top of that, we sort of started to build more of a rock power pop thing. And before we knew it, we kind of had our own sound. It wasn't really defined on that cassette that Barrett held up a few minutes ago.
Yeah.
I was telling him, could it be four different songs on one EP?
Oh, yeah.
Well, if we were to play one of those four songs, which one would you pick?
What do you think, Jeff? You think Animal would be the track off that one, maybe? Because that one has that one's got more of the funk sound to it, which was really what we were doing at the beginning.
Hmm. That'd be a good one.
Yeah, that's the one. Animal or Sex Jam. Yeah, I forgot. Yeah, I was kind of an odd name for it. Yeah.
Yeah, I was just going to say the title of the file you sent me doesn't just say Animal. There,
so. Oh, yeah. No, we were artistes, man.
I'm glad the or is in there.
That could have been something completely different.
Yeah. All right, let's hear this. So, well, first of all, where did you guys record that? Did you have a professional, did you go into a studio and do that? Or how did you get that done?
We went to a local studio, recorded those four songs, good friend, T. West McCraw. And it was in the basement of a little house there on a, was it a 4-track or 8-track or what was that now?
Oh, yeah, it was one of those old Yamaha 4-track, like eight track. They were squeezing 8 tracks out of them at that time. I had one myself, almost the same model that he had at the time. That was his mom's place.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
A little brick house. And we recorded in the basement. Yeah. And squeezed every piece of real estate out of those 8 tracks we possibly could.
Yes, we did.
Yeah.
And, so, and then what did you do with that? Did you just like sell them at shows or what were your plan? What was your plan there for the recording?
We were trying to book, shows a lot of different places. We wanted to use that for a press kit, which we put together. Dallas is a very creative guy, put together a really cool little press kit and, kind of funny story. I remember driving to about every club we could find and, dropping off these press kits. Sometimes realizing later they weren't places we really wanted to play as we were getting chased out of them, but
or even be.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
But yeah, we would sell them at shows and we used them for the press kits and, you know, we sold a decent number of them and just had some fun with that, that little cassette.
Cool. Well, you got, you're probably your biggest fan right here. From the cassette, right?
Yeah.
So there you go.
And at that time,
right.
At that time, the band was called just Soma, correct?
That's right.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And then when did the band name change?
Well, it was not too long. I mean, it was maybe after about a year. I was trying to estimate this as I was kind of writing out the history last night, but I think it was about a year probably after we formed that we started to, I mean, the internet, you know, internet access at that time was pretty much in its infancy for us, but, you know, and we would have the opportunity to kind of do some music research. You know, I started seeing that there were, you know, at least a few bands out there that were called Soma. It's a reference to Brave New World. Soma was like the good time drug in that book.
I remember that. Yeah. From high school and reading that book. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's a cool name.
Yeah. So we thought, well, how can we change it? We like Soma. How can we change it to make it unique? You know, so a bit of weird foreshadowing there, but how can we change it to make it unique so no one has a similar name? And we thought, how about Soma Sonic? And we just put them together. We're like, that sounds cool. Soma Sonic. Yeah. So we actually did a name change party. Do you remember that, really? Jeff?
That's cool.
We had big posters printed up. Like, we probably spent more money at Kinko's than any major business in the Akron area. We were spending so much money and so much time at Kinko's. It was like Norm walking into Cheers when we would go to Kinko's. I mean, hey, Soma Sonic, what's up, guys? Yep. Yeah, we got all the Day Glow card stock in. We're ready to go. So we made these big posters, and it said Soma is now. And I think we put like foil over top of the name of Soma Sonic, and then like,
oh, cool.
At midnight, we had everybody rip it down, and we're like, now we're called Soma Sonic. You know,
great idea.
That's wish awesome. I had that much time in my hands now, but seriously, right? You know, it was cool. You know, so we went from that point forth. We were Soma Sonic, and at that time, we were just getting geared up to record our first full length record. So we went into that as Soma Sonic.
What was your following like? Were you playing? Where were you playing? What kind of crowds were you getting? That kind of thing.
So it was all over the board. Our following was picking up, and we would play shows that would have pretty sizable crowds. I don't know what kind of number to throw out, but you know, potentially, you know, a couple hundred people showing up. And then we would travel around, and I remember playing shows often for 5, 10, 15 people, you know, as we're trying to break into other cities. So, you know, we started hitting Columbus a bit and some other places. And so, you know, those were sometimes a struggle, but tons of fun, tons of memories, and especially a memory that comes about from when Barrett was following us to Columbus and had to put the fire out on our van with a squeegee.
That was good.
I'm also remembering the Heidelberg Club in Columbus with the I think it was just the one drunk guy sitting in the audience and all the pallets on the floor.
The Heidelberg, South Heidelberg is what it was called. It was on High Street down in Columbus, kind of near the university, but it was just like literally a pit in this basement, the floor, dirt floor, standing water, near electrical equipment on the stage.
Lord.
Oh, you kind of just opened the restroom door and peed into it. It was really a interesting joint. And if you've got any kind of, I mean, I'm sure it's not there anymore, but if you had any kind of claustrophobic tendencies, you either had to get drunk and get past it or just leave. Because there was only one way out, and it was a very thin, looked like a cartel tunnel to get out of this place.
Wow. Scary. I want to ask you, Barrett, what was it about these guys' music that instantly hooked you?
I think it was just completely unique. It was something a sound which I hadn't heard before. Mm. It's their stage presence. I mean, before that, I was usually up at a place called the Grog Shop with like all the local punk bands. Mm-hmm. And you know, going to see them was something completely new, something different, and just the energy that they brought to the stage.
That's awesome. I love the idea of somebody seeing them and then calling you up and saying you got to be here tonight or like for their next show. I mean, that's awesome when somebody gets that excited about a new band.
Oh yeah.
Barrett kind of founded our group of super fans. I think we call them super fans.
Oh, I remember
that. That's very cool.
Barrett got so many people into the band. He was definitely like, you know, a driving force to get people to notice us at the beginning. And, you know, still to this day, if we ever get together, he comes out.
Yeah.
I can believe it because he's been like that for us too.
Oh, he has. Yeah. Yes. Coming down for some of our live shows has meant a lot to us.
He's like really the Pied Piper of fans, man. It's awesome, everybody follows behind him. Yeah.
Just always good for a road trip.
Oh, yeah.
And I made my way out to Pittsburgh to see some cool bands that he's recommended as well. So I've always had fun those times, and it's been a while, so I'm gonna have to make another trip out there sometime, Barry. And
yeah, let's hope soon, right?
See another band once it starts thawing out a little bit here.
Actually, think about Pittsburgh. I remember the one time you guys did the show out in Pittsburgh. It was right in Market Square. I remember it was like just freezing cold, snowing on the way out. The van had no heat in it whatsoever, and I think Dallas got sick.
Yeah,
I think like
that was something.
Dallas, that's the time I tried to throw the hot chocolate on the windshield.
Oh yeah, that worked.
Get the ice off.
Yeah, so we're driving along.
It didn't work very well.
Yeah. we're driving down. I think it was Route 80, right?
I don't know.
Yeah, I think we're 76 or one of those routes that goes kind of through the middle of nowhere for a while on the way to Pittsburgh. Just no one else on the road. We were crazy. You know, we're plowing our own way through this highway. Oh, snow's flying, windows iced up, the windshield wipers aren't even moving, much less having any kind of fluid. Jeff has this great idea. He's got a blazing hot chocolate, and he's like, "Oh, dude, watch this!" And just leans out as he's driving, goes, and this hot chocolate just goes bloop. And just immediately just a big brown spot right in front of his face. Right.
Lesson learned on that one.
Had to try it.
Yes, of course. Seems reasonable. Yeah.
That's one thing we have no shortage of is road stories.
That's for sure.
Well, there you go. That's worth it. Yeah.
You know, one thing that I would say is around that time, there were a lot of really great bands in the area, and the band scene was really good. You know, it was fun to go out and watch other local bands, and you know, I think a lot of bands got along well and, you know, really tried to work together, set up shows together. And, you know, that was a lot of fun. I don't know how much that goes on today, but it seems like that time was interesting and good that way.
Well, I think you guys also had a lot of support from like 107.9 that was actually playing the local bands back then, too.
That's true.
Cool.
Yeah. The Inner Sanctum definitely, you know, played us a lot. You know, a lot of the local stations in Akron, and then we had one in Canton that played us a little bit. And then when we did that kind of coalition with, it was us, this band called The Fifth Wheel, and another band called Insect, and we kind of all got together under this R Attic Records moniker, and we decided to kind of centralize all of our efforts. So The Fifth Wheel had an office in downtown Wadsworth, and we would all get together there, and it was just, we were trying to make it happen. We were making phone calls. We would have lists of, you know, we'd have all these publications. We'd be calling colleges, trying to get hold of music directors, sending out letters. We had typewriters or typing letters, putting together press kits with all three albums in it. And then eventually we got enough money together between three of us to get onto into the College Music Journal and take out an ad. And then if you took out an ad in College Music Journal, you could be included on their sampler CD, which was like a thing that went out probably like quarterly. So we ended up CMJ's quarterly sampler, and that went out, and actually all three bands ended up getting a pretty decent amount of airplay on college stations, and Soma Sonic ended up charting on a few different stations, and even as far as like East Coast stuff, we would get correspondence letting us know that we were getting airplay. It was pretty cool.
That is cool.
That's very cool. Yeah. It's funny. I just want to go back real quick. You mentioned the press kit. I remember as a journalist back when I was in college in the 80s and then later on, you know, pre-internet, the whole idea of like a physical press kit, man, that was a lot of time, effort, and money to put those things together. You'd have like a folder, you know, with like the bio and maybe, you know, and some music
and a glossy
photo. Yeah. Cause then the publication could, you know, could produce, you know, produce that and print that photo. Right. Yep. And, and then you had to mail it to everybody.
Yeah. I mean,
that's way different from how things work today, you know?
Yeah. And I was looking through, another thing, you know, unique to that time, you know, Barrett had made us that website, which was, you couldn't even really spell out the name to someone because back then you didn't have your own URL. It was like slash, 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 you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, that was cool and everything. But most people, you know, they wanted to either be on the mailing list or they could call the Somasonic hotline.
What? So
we had bought a phone number, and we just had a phone with an answering machine sitting in one of Jeff's dad's offices in Wadsworth. And we would put that in the records and put it on all the flyers, call the Somasonic hotline. And then we would, you know, every month we would record. We'd be like, thank you for calling the Somasonic hotline. This month's show's playing at Peabody's Down Under on March 15th with special guests. You know, we'd have the whole thing recorded. Cool. And then sometimes people would leave interesting messages on that thing. I had kind of forgotten about the hotline until I was just looking at the cover of the CD.
Oh, yeah.
That's hilarious.
That was an adventure in itself, recording that CD at Midtown, because at that time, that was the place where, like, Trent Reznor had kind of made his...
Oh, really?
All of his early recordings, and did Pretty Hate Machine, and Marilyn Manson was doing some stuff there at the time, and Bone Thugs and stuff, you know, a lot of the old Cleveland bands, and we got to hear a lot of different stories and listen to some stuff. It was pretty interesting, but great old studio.
That was a fun experience.
Yeah, great old studio.
Were you guys doing it full time at that point, or was there a point where you were doing it all full time?
Not for me. I was working, going to school, and then putting a lot of time into the band. So it was definitely a few hours of sleep and lots of other things going on. But it was a lot of fun. And, you know, you felt energized and we kept going. So it was good times.
Absolutely. Yeah. I was kind of
just you guys had a drive.
Manual labor. That's incredible. And whatever, you know.
Yeah. Just
making ends meet. But this was what it was all about. All the energy to the band.
And all the money you guys would get from gigs and whatever, selling albums and tapes and all that, would go into money to go into the studio. Is that kind of the way you guys did it? Or
yeah, we put all the money into one account. We never took money out individually. And Dallas talks about, you know, making the flyers and posters and all the things we did. We would budget things out and use it for, you know, those purposes, but then also we were saving up to get studio time and things like that, which, you know, it didn't come easy, but in the end, that experience at Midtown was a great experience and a lot of fun recording that Somasonic CD.
All right, cool. Well, let's hear something off that CD.
Yeah.
1997, Somasonic. What should we hear?
Go ahead, Dal.
Maybe Crush might be a good one. That's got good energy.
Okay. Crush. All right, there you go. That's Crush.
Awesome.
What do you guys hear when you listen back to that?
We sound it sounds so young. My voice is just so, like, I guess for me, like, it's just the hearing myself sing is just crazy at that age, you know, like, the tenor of my voice is a lot different than it is now, but it's still fun to sing those songs, although it's like, I kind of have to put myself there in that mode, but
yeah.
We have just a lot of energy, as what I remember doing those recordings. We were so, you know, at that time you're recording to 24 track reel to reel,
2-inch tape, and if you weren't practiced, there wasn't a whole lot you could do to fix anything. You had to just be good. You had to be practiced. You could overdub some things, but you know, you just had to be well practiced before you went in there and started spending money, because it wasn't cheap. So, right. You know, I just remember we spent so much time preparing and practicing for that. And when we got in there, we were just so full of energy that, you know, I still hear that just energy of youth in that whole record. It's just kind of that reckless sort of.
Now I feel the same way, you know, the energy, the fun. I haven't probably heard that song for quite a long time. And, you know, hear it come on. That's a lot of fun and a lot of great memories. I think back at the time in that studio and just amazing memories and experience putting that CD together. That was fun.
That's cool.
Absolutely.
You guys weren't so beaten down by life yet.
Right. Yeah. We
exactly.
All right. Yeah. Okay. So I want to get to this. I find this really interesting. So the CD comes out and I guess it goes over pretty big, right?
Yeah. We had two CD release parties for it. By that time we had a pretty good sized Akron following, and then we were able to do one up in Cleveland, which was the big one at Peabody's Down Under, which was actually the second iteration of Peabody's Down Under, which was down in the flats on the east bank of the flats in Cleveland. Yep. And, we played the main stage there, and that place was, we had radio ads, I think, going out before that show. We had, I think we might have had a listening party at some point. So we really, I mean, we promoted that show harder than any show we had ever promoted. And I was saying a lot for us. You know, we did radio beforehand, and that place was pretty close to, if not sold out that night.
Oh, yeah.
We all dressed like, you know, in suits. Like we looked like the Beatles, kind of had like the all black suits with ties, the skinny ties, and just went out. And another fun fact about that, we had two Playboy models that night.
What?
Jeff can Jeff can fill in the how that happened. I'm still not exactly sure how that happened, but we had Heather Kozar, which was a local to Akron girl that ended up in Playboy around that time in 97. And then one other model. They came out and kind of tried to do some kind of emceeing or intro or something for the show. I don't remember that.
Yeah, it was. They introduced us with Rocco the Rock Dog.
Oh yeah, Rocco. And,
I know a lot of people said they said our name wrong.
Yeah, they did.
But yeah, that was kind of fun.
Okay, we're 38 minutes into this thing, and you're just now bringing this up. I can hear Patrick over there typing away. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, Heather Kozar. Huh?
She was actually a lot of fun. She was real nice. Hung out backstage, like hung out in the green room, was signing stuff for everybody. It was cool. She was a nice girl. But yeah, it was that show was so much fun. I mean, we had everything going on from we had like a little mini art show there, like artists were showing off their stuff. You know, we had probably three different openers. Yeah, we had DJ. It was crazy. Yeah,
it was a lot of fun.
By the time we went on, it was the place kind of exploded. It was probably one of the most fun shows I've ever played in my entire life. You know, because it was just like the realization of all that work, and then.
Yeah.
Sold a ton of CDs, and it was really, that really kind of solidified everything right there.
That's really cool.
I would agree with you now. That was a great night.
It really was.
So how long after this did the name change then happen?
Well, it wasn't too much longer. I mean, the CD release happened with spring, summer-ish, and then right at the end of 1997, and we have actually, I had taken some pictures of a copy of this thing and posted them on our Facebook page a while ago. But I think it was a fax even that came into Jeff's dad's office, which is where we practiced most of the time down in the basement there. And it was a law firm sent this letter and with official, you know, official headings and the whole thing, and was addressed to Somasonic. And it was from a New York, I believe, law firm.
Yeah.
Pretty serious, you know, one of the biggest law firms around. It actually was I believe Madonna's law firm. It was a very music industry focused law firm. So anyway, they were sending a letter to us on behalf of this band called Semisonic out of Minnesota. And Semisonic had just kind of released this song called Closing Time, and it was really making its way up the charts at the time. So Semisonic, and in particular their singer, Dan Wilson, had heard of us through whatever, through radio or however he heard of us, and wasn't happy about our name. So Dan Wilson decided they were going to send us a cease and desist. So they sent us this letter and said, you know, we find that, you know, that this name could cause confusion because it's, and actually they messed up in the letter. They said beside one letter, it's identical where it was two letters, but you know, whatever,
right.
You know, but, yeah, that was pretty scary. Like, you know, I mean, it's you're looking back on it now, it's just cease and desist letter isn't much, you know, it's just a kind of a chest bump or whatever,
right.
But you know, we kind of took it and thought about it and. Yeah.
The funny thing to me there was, you know, we disagreed, but all of a sudden people started showing up to our show saying play Closing Time. So, you know, maybe there were some legs to that letter.
It's funny. Like I know you have a memory, but I don't ever have a remembrance of anybody saying that, but I do remember somebody telling me they saw somebody say that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was just like, you know, these guys are not even, you know, we sound nothing alike, you know, what are these guys doing beating up on a band from Cleveland? That's, you know, we're just out here trying to work and get some exposure. And, you know, hell, we changed the name of the band once just, you know,
right.
Preemptively so that we wouldn't have this problem. And we end up changing it to something that draws that exact type of attention to it in the end. So, you know, we're like, I mean, we're not going to go to court. We have nothing. We're not going to go to court against these guys. I mean, that kind of put a kind of a damper on it. I mean, we really had been working so hard, you know, for the exposure that we did get. And now I was like kind of faced with this whole thing of like, God, going through another name change. Like, what were we even, we talked about it. We couldn't come up with anything that we liked nearly as much as Somasonic.
Mm.
But yeah, that was our, our brush with fame. Although not the brush with famous bands, hope.
Right. Well, they made money on it unless they owed the record company for studio time and everything else.
True. Oh yeah, that was kind of the end at that point. But you know, through a couple other, you know, there were a couple other things that happened in between, and Jeff and I worked on a couple of other projects. Eventually we did get Somasonic back together and not too long ago.
Right.
We ended up reuniting. But in between there were a couple of bands. One was called Halo for Adam, and that one was a band that myself and Dave, the bass player from Somasonic, went off and did that project, which was kind of more of a studio project. It was really just, we were just trying to get something done with a record label, and we got close, but it didn't quite happen. We only played like a couple shows, and then that band broke up. And then Jeff and Dave and I, all three of us, got back together again, and we actually formed more of like a heavier rock band, which was nothing at all like Somasonic. You know, it was kind of the same core of people. We brought in two other guitar players, and I just sang. My brother played guitar, and then one of the guitarists from Insect, Joe Brannon. Insect was one of the bands in the Coalition back in the day, so we came together and formed this band called American Rockstar. And American Rockstar actually ended up having quite a long run in Cleveland. And we played, we were around for about 12, 13 years.
Yeah.
And before that band kind of fizzled out, but, yeah. So after that, after all that went by, you know, Jeff and I, you know, we kept in touch throughout the years, and, you know, I think it was Jeff that kind of first brought up the idea, like, wouldn't it be cool if we finally recorded a lot of these songs that never got done? Because we had a really good group of songs that never were recorded and officially released. I mean, there were a couple that were on this kind of crappy cassette we put out, but yeah, that one, which didn't see a whole lot of action, but yeah. So I was like, I would love to record those songs. So we kind of just separately, like Jeff went in, I recorded some scratch tracks with Dave, sent them over to Jeff. He took them into the studio, Wes McCraw's studio, the same guy that did the original EP back in the day. He has a really successful recording studio now. He went there, recorded all the tracks, drum tracks, and then each one of us kind of separately laid down our tracks. I collected everyone's tracks and mixed the record at home. And by the time we started in 2016, by the time 2018 came around, we were ready to release it. And we did our first show in the new millennium. Okay. and played down this place called Jilly's Music Room in Akron. And place was absolutely packed to the gills, and it was so much fun to play all those old songs. And we were really happy with how the CD came out. And since then, we played I think two more shows since then, and we were hoping to play at least one or two shows this year. Of course, everything got sidelined, but can't wait until we can play again, that's for sure, you know. And who knows, I mean, there's more, could be potentially more music in the pipeline. We shall see.
Yeah, you know, I listened to it today several times, and I got to tell you guys, man, I really got stuck on the last track, Underwater. I played the record through, and then I played that last song like a couple more times because I thought it was really, really cool and interesting.
Oh, cool.
Coming kind of at the end there, right? Yeah. And it gives you a little bit of a different kind of contemplative feel to kind of wrap up the record. It's really, really cool song.
Oh, well, thank you so much. That's cool to hear.
Thank you for saying that. Interesting. Note on that song was we dropped it from the set list. You know, people used to request that song, and I remember at some point we were trying to add other songs into the set list, and that was one that got dropped. So when we recorded it, that was a lot of fun for me. I enjoyed bringing that one back to life a little bit.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. That's great.
One of our friends left a message when we did the CD release show announcement on Facebook, and it said, "I have waited 20 years for a recording of Underwater."
Oh, nice. There you go. Beautiful.
All right. Now, here's the deal. If the band Semisonic does any kind of reunion thing, I want you to send them a cease and desist
yes,
letter now.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
Back at you, bud.
Fair enough.
That's right.
It was funny because when we were setting up for the show at Jilly's, I actually put this up as a live stream on Facebook. As I'm setting up stuff on stage with Jeff, first song that comes on over the PA, Closing Time.
No way.
I hold up my phone and I'm like, these guys won't leave us alone.
That's all right,
man. That is crazy.
It haunts you, man.
Man.
Now, Barrett, what did you think when Somasonic got back together? Were you just like ecstatic about this?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I was really looking forward to the show, and I think, like other people have said, it was actually good to finally see those songs put on an album because for years I'd had like recordings of them, but you know, things that were just copied off of tape.
Right.
Things that were like recorded off the audio of like an old crappy videotape or something like that. Yeah. So to actually have a really good, perfect version of it was just absolutely amazing again.
Guy, Barrett, you're a good fan and just a good guy.
You are a good guy.
You're a good guy.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks very much. This has really been interesting stuff.
It's fascinating.
We so appreciate it.
Yeah. And you know, I got to say it, you know, as an old guy myself, and you guys are younger than Jim and I and
everyone
and,
is.
Yeah, that's right. kudos to you guys for going back and rescuing those songs, you know, for the people who loved them and, you know, giving a chance for folks like me and the folks at our community that will listen to this episode and get turned on to you guys. Kudos for going back and rescuing those songs. I think it's great. And I wish more people would, you know, care about their art enough to take the care to do those kind of things. And I do hope that you guys will get the chance to play live again really soon because it certainly seems like it's something that makes you guys really happy and you're good at.
Yeah,
it seems
I think that'd be a good road trip. You know, it's right on my right on the way for me to visit my folks in Toledo. So let
me
know.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
You know,
absolutely.
I get to stop right on by.
I like that.
Absolutely.
Idea.
All right.
We would love
to.
That sounds cool. All right. Well, here's to 2021. We're hoping for better things.
Yes, absolutely. Oh, God. Absolutely. Yeah. We're going to plan something really
podcast.
Yeah, we'll plan something really fun.
Yeah, sounds cool. Well, sure. Thank you very much.
Thank you,
Dallas,
so much, guys.
Jeff. We really appreciate it, and it's just a joy to talk to people who just have this love of music. So
yeah,
thanks for having us.
Yeah, absolutely. Likewise. Anything Barrett likes, we're going to be right behind him most of the time. So unless it's Phil Collins, we're ready.
All right, and with that,
I always have to ruin it at the end.
So one thing we should tell the listeners is where they can hear your music. So the new album, yep. Displaced, which came out in 2018, that is available on like the major streaming services, right?
Streaming services, yeah. And also, if you're a CD type. A physical media person, you can get it via CD Baby. It's available there.
Cool.
We do have a CD version out there.
Sweet.
Yeah, and then if anybody wants to follow us online, you can just search Soma Sonic on Facebook, and after filtering through Semisonic, you should see us.
All right, so find them on Facebook. All right, cool. Well, thanks very much. And
thanks, guys.
As I mentioned, this was a Patreon episode. If anyone would like to learn more about our Patreon perks, you can go to patreon.com/suburbspod. All right. Any closing thoughts, Barrett?
Nope. Good to see Dallas and Jeff again. Hopefully I can see you guys back in Ohio sometime soon.
Absolutely. Can't wait, man. It's going
to
be fun.
All right.
Look forward to it, Barrett.
Yep. Take care, guys. Stay safe.
You as well.
Rock on. Thanks, guys.
It's Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And with us has been Barrett Reese, Dallas Riffle, and Jeff Novak. And we'll talk to all you guys later.
Sometimes I wonder which one of us was real and which one was dreaming, which one made me feel the way that I feel, drifting away. Dreaming underwater, drowning there
I just have to say I appreciate that these guys didn't shoot me because I booked some shady gigs, along the way. So we ended up in some pretty interesting places.
That's cool. Yeah,
I remember there was one place we went. We played this real energetic set. You know, we were just, you know, really putting our all into it, trying to win over the crowd. No one's really paying us much mind. Main band comes up. Everybody starts coming up to the stage. These guys walk out. Dude's wearing an old floppy kind of cowboy hat. He looks out at the crowd and he goes, "If you ain't into songs about trucking, you're in for a night of hell." We're like, maybe this wasn't the best pairing.